vampires, werewolves, ghouls, ghosts. Mummies that come back to life after 3,000 years. Can such things be? Well, I've spent a lifetime doing my best to persuade you, at least for an hour or two in a darkened theater, that there are things that go bump in the night and raise a lump in your throat, a hard knot of terror. But I hope that some of these excerpts you're about to hear will serve to conjure up visions for you once again of the magic moments of terror in these classic tales.
Welcome, girls and ghouls. This is Steven. Welcome to As the Story Grows. This is our first annual Halloween Spooktacular, and I hope you're enjoying this campfire ambiance I've got going on here. You're going to hear some songs, some scary stories, even more frightening, we will hear from Travis a little later. And in addition to Travis, we will be talking to our good friend Jeff Betker. Some of you may know him from Suffering and the Hideous Thieves. He actually goes by Jeff Suffering in some of his bands, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard of that guy. He's also the lead singer of 90 Pound Wuss. Yeah, remember that band? And currently he's fronting the band Dry Bones. Oh, he was in Raft of Dead Monkeys, too. We have to mention that band. So, yeah, he'll be on, and we'll be talking about some spooky stuff. Also, we're going to talk to my good friend Scott Renberg. He's been on several podcasts with me in the past. He's just a good friend of mine, lives here in town, has a really good band called The Suburban Sound. Just a really cool dude, and he loves Halloween. And we're going to be talking about the top five horror movie film scores. And I'm just going to mention right now, I'm going to get it out of the way, I completely looked past my, like, one of my all-time favorites. If anyone knows me and knows my work in Tantrum of the Muse, you know that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre score is absolutely, positively one of the greatest pieces of music ever made. And somehow, like a complete dipshit, I don't know what happened. I drew a blank. But I provide five other excellent scores, and so does Scott. So we're going to go talk about that right now.
I was a teenage werewolf, the most terrifying picture of our time. I was a teenage werewolf, fantastic, bewildering. A motion picture to stand beside the greatest horror stories of all time. I was a teenage werewolf.
you on because, you know, we talk a lot about music, and this particular episode, we are, we're doing some self-indulgent stuff here. We're just, you know, we're keeping the schedule the same, but we're adding some extras. So this is an extra episode, and, we're just going to have some fun, and we're going to talk about, actually we have a music, related subject. We're going to talk about our top five favorite horror movie film scores. So I'm excited to do this because,
it's nice being outside.
We're filming on location here at Cerro Ranchero, which is my home and the farm I live on. And we're staring at a full moon.
It's crazy.
That is enormous and kind of creepy actually. And, yeah, the naked trees and naked Scott. No.
Well, at least I put my shirt back on.
Yeah, it's kind of cold out here.
It is.
But, yeah, we got the ambiance going. It's pretty sweet, actually. I should have lit a fire. It'd probably be a little warmer, but oh well.
We've got this nice Yankee candle here.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of ridiculous. My wife's in the house probably laughing at us right now.
They're peeking through the windows.
Yeah.
Look at those idiots.
We just love this time of year, so we act like buffoons.
Kind of medley here, man. This is nice.
What are you drinking?
Right now?
Yeah.
We're at home.
We got to make it even colder.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have...
We're recording?
Yeah, we're recording. Okay. We have ice cold beer out here. It's kind of not very smart.
Oh, it's nice.
Yeah, what is that you're drinking? Oh, wow. That's probably going to be really... It's so loud. Oh, man.
This is a...
How do you say that? Terrapin?
Pumpkin Fest?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Check this out.
So, Scott, I'm going to let you, as our guest, start this list off.
Okay.
And give us your bottom five or your not-so-favorite to start.
Not-so-favorite of your favorites.
Like the least of your five favorites.
Okay. Well, then I'll start. I'll do Rosemary's Baby.
Nice. Nice choice.
That movie is just awesome, and the soundtrack, it just makes it for me. It's so creepy. It's scored so well. The orchestra.
Is it orchestra stuff more, or is it more like music? I remember it being more like
70s. It's like a 70s score, because there's some weird...
Was it 70s?
60s? I think it was late 60s when the movie came out, but it's got that, it's a little hokey at points, but, that's a good score.
Nothing really special to add to it.
No, it's it just makes the... We were talking about doing the scores. I was just thinking, what music makes movies for me?
Yeah, I mean, I should preface that we're picking not our favorite horror films necessarily, although for some of mine and some of yours, I'm sure, it's both.
Yeah.
But we're picking mostly for the music. And sort of, if you were to take the music away from the film, you probably would be left with a much less effective movie because of the strength of the score, and that's kind of why those are the films I'm talking about for myself. I'll give you an honorary or not an honorary mention, but my bottom five, I guess. I'm gonna go with Friday the 13th, the original score by Harry Manfredini, I should say.
It's solid.
Yeah. This one, they used this score, I believe, through the first seven of... I don't even know how many of those they made. This is, at least for the first seven of the Friday the 13th movies, they ripped this guy's score and just kept using it. Hopefully they paid him for it. But it's just very... it's heavy on the strings, the violins, a lot of, like, hard bowing on the violins in, like, a really creepy way, and just, like, screechy type of string. I'm more into, like, the orchestral type of score music. So, for me, that really adds to the atmosphere of the, those movies, like, which are almost always out in the, you know, Camp Crystal, like out in the woods, you know? So it's, definitely a good score. So we'll just keep going back and forth.
Yeah.
We don't have a whole lot of stuff to say. We're just listing these things, and we're going to play some segments of it, and maybe you guys at home will be inspired to check these films out.
Did you just watch Scream again the other night? Because, you know, I did.
Scream?
Yeah.
The first Scream's really good,
yeah,
actually.
It's solid. And then they were in that beginning scene. Remember how they sold everyone on Drew Barrymore was the star of the movie, but then she dies, spoiler alert, in like the first 5 minutes?
Yeah.
And they were
I never understood when people said spoiler alert, like, in the middle of a spoiler, or they'll say spoil alert,
and then they go real quick.
Just say it, and you're like, "Well, that gave me time to stop and pause." You know,
spoiler alert. I'm about to tell you that Drew Barrymore dies in the first 5 minutes of the movie if you haven't seen it. But
well, it came out in 1994.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it now, you just don't want to.
You blew it.
But then they're like, you know, the guy's talking to her, and he was like, you know, who was the killer in Friday the 13th? And she, like, goes on and on about it with being Jason.
She was Jason.
I've seen that movie. Yeah. Spoiler alert. It wasn't Jason.
Yeah.
Killer, mommy. Killer.
That was great. That actually that was a great, really smart part of that movie, for sure.
Yeah.
What do you think of that movie's score?
Scream?
Yeah.
It's got a lot of cool music in it. I mean, like, the Red Right Hand.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a soundtrack.
It's more of a soundtrack than a score.
You're talking about Nick Cave, Red Right Hand?
Yeah, in the Scream soundtrack. Although, they kind of used that throughout the piece and then had a few
I don't remember a thing about the soundtrack or the score of that movie. Yeah. I kind of... This may be a little bit... This is probably not fair, but I kind of... I don't enjoy modern film scores as much. I'm sure... I mean, I know there's some really good ones out there. One in particular was Let the Right One In, but I can't remember.
It's a great movie.
I can't remember the composer, but like for me, I'm kind of picking from like the classics, like the older things that I grew up on, and because I'm an old fart that hates everything that's new. So, anyway,
yeah, the new ones are more like soundtracks anyway. Most
yeah,
of them are
exactly.
Scored.
Yeah,
even some of the older ones. Looking at them now, it was like there's a lot of soundtracks, not a lot of...
Yeah, and soundtracks. There'd be a good discussion there to have some. Horror soundtracks.
It's one of the cool things about older horror movies, though, is that they're a lot of them are scored like this.
Yeah.
Really well done ones. Even some of the really bad scores are hilarious and awesome.
Well, and there's like really good scores to really bad movies sometimes, but you don't want to mention them because you're like, oh, the movie's kind of stupid, but the music sometimes is really memorable. And I don't remember the name of, I was going to say Puppet Master. From Charles Band, that score comes to mind. Or the movie, I wouldn't put that on my top 10. Although I do enjoy The Puppet Master, the first couple of those movies. But they're really bad quality. They're really cheesy, like straight up B-movie, like direct-to-video type quality. But the first couple have a really awesome score. And I would mention the score for it. I wish I could. It's Charles Band... he's the director. I think it's his father, Richard Band, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, I'm geeking out here a little bit. But so, getting back to our top five, what? So we both went around, right? Okay. So, what else you got?
Let's see here. What did I do so far?
Well, you gave me Rosemary's Baby, and thank you.
You're welcome. I'd like to have her back now.
You can have her. I've seen the end of that movie.
Jeez. It's a lot of power if you have that kid, though.
What's that?
Think about the power having that child.
Yeah.
There's some scenes in that go kind of rogue.
Yeah. Yeah. I would. That's a good word to say, rogue.
Like, I guess I would go with Jaws, then.
You know... A lot of people are probably like, oh, well, of course.
It's typical.
But you know something? And I'll say this about this film, and I'll say it about another one later on my list. If you were to take the music away from Jaws, that movie would suck. Like, yeah. I mean, it would be good in aspects of it, but that's a powerful score.
Yeah.
And I would argue that it's definitely on the horror list, even though it's such a mainstream success and it's a big blockbuster. But that would be... who was that? John Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. John Williams definitely... like iconic and scary.
Yeah. I was one of those where I was like, ah, you know, most people don't even think of this as like a, like you probably think of like Nightmare on Elm Street,
yeah,
or something like that. But
right.
I don't know. It's
some things are more specifically like horror.
Yeah,
like that sometimes falls in between like family blockbuster entertainment and horror, but it's still a horror.
It is a horror movie,
straight up. And
some of those scenes, like in the even like the parts of the score that you don't think about. Like that you're used to in Jaws, but like when they're in the water,
mm-hmm.
like just the light music that plays through some yeah. of those really make it like creepy.
And one thing I love about it, and again, there's another film that I'll talk about that is parallel in this regard. Some of the best parts of the score for that movie are just like single notes. Obviously, dun 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 dun. I mean,
yeah.
those are single notes. I mean, you can go. And I wouldn't be surprised if John Williams just sat by a piano and just went ding, 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 and just was like, wait a minute. You know, there's something here.
Like that scene where in Ghostbusters where Bill Murray comes into Sigourney Weaver's apartment and just plays those two notes.
You do that. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. And man, that score is awesome, though. And like, all the like people always think of the dun, 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 but there's, like, several pieces of music that are, like, amazing in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely an amazing score. This is going to be a little bit of a cheat because this person's on my list twice, but I got to go with John Carpenter and Alan Holworth. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. One of the most famously panned and hated movies, because in the third of the Halloween series, Michael Myers is not in the movie, but it has become a cult favorite as of late, and a lot of people are starting to give the movie its fair attention, and it's got a really creepy score, and it's John Carpenter embracing the electronic keyboard sort of thing that he became famous for in the later 80s. But it kind of started with Halloween 2, but it really like came into full effect in this one, and it's just got a really creepy sense of doom to it when you listen to it. And it's one of those soundtracks where if someone were to ever play it like out of season, like in the summer or something, it would transport me right here to this season, and like, it just immediately makes me feel like really excited to watch the movies, and I don't know, man. I have it on vinyl. That's how much I love the first three Halloweens on vinyl. I just love it that much.
I think that's something that distinguishes the Halloween 3. It like it's just a solid Halloween movie, like for
yeah.
Halloween, not actually like part of necessarily the franchise. People can go back and forth on that, but as far as like a solid,
mm-hmm.
just take the name away and watch it. You probably dig it for Halloween, right?
People always say that was a mistake, but the whole original, well, I wouldn't say it was the original intent, but certainly after the sequels started to happen, the intent was to make Halloween a series of films that were, you know, each year you'd get a new film that had that took place on Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And people always say, well, the third movie was the mistake. I think the biggest mistake is making Halloween 2, because it's like, it established that you had a a franchise. So then they do a third one, and then everyone's like, well, wait a minute, what's going on?
Yeah, they could have just made a different movie.
What's that?
They could have just made, like, a different movie.
Well, yeah, I think they should have just stuck with their guns in the first place and made Halloween 2 the different movie, and they wouldn't have to worry about that. But obviously that became a completely different...
Yeah, but I like all the Michael Myers.
Oh, I love Michael Myers. I love that series for different reasons. Different movies for different reasons. But, yeah, I think I would love to see, like, a high-budget Season of the Witch remake, like, without the Halloween 3 title, and just take that Invasion of the Body Snatchers type of plot and just sort of really dive into the stuff that they laid. You know, the groundwork was laid with that, and I just would love to see what they could do with the masks and stuff, the sort of that concept. But yeah, creepy movie and an awesome score.
Yeah. All right, I guess. Dude, it sounds like someone's murdering a dog or a cat in the woods behind your house.
Well, they might be. It is hunting season.
Or they're just...
It might be my buddy Keith. He might be out in the woods right now shooting a deer.
Could be one of your other neighbors, because there's a full moon or something.
That's true.
Okay, so
yeah,
my...
Yeah, I was talking about Halloween 3.
Third one is... I know it's not the full thing, because some of this is the soundtrack, but the score for Carrie.
Yeah.
By Marco Beltrami. I'm reading this, obviously.
Is that spelled correctly, or is that pronunciated right?
No, not even a little bit. I was going to read the one for Rosemary's Baby, but I couldn't spell the guy's name because he's, like, Czech, and
yeah,
it's all, like...
these are all, like, people from, like, other countries.
But,
know anything about.
The music in that movie just, like... we were talking a little bit before we started about the movie Carrie.
Yeah.
But when the opening scene, especially... And then the scene where she's at the prom.
Yeah.
The music in there, but... The opening scene starts like this weird kind of tacky 70s like daytime soap opera.
Right.
And the music kind of completely fits it. And then it just turns and goes into this completely horrific scene that sets the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And all the weird moments with her mom in the house. And like the kind of like while she's discovering that there's something crazy evil about her.
Right.
The movie, just the music that goes along with that is really like impactful, I think, and makes those scenes.
Is the main sequence, like the main, there's always like the main theme.
Yeah, and then there's like bands and stuff.
To?
Yeah, yeah, there's one soundtrack. I think there's a soundtrack that you can get that's the score, like there's the score that you can buy, and then they have like the band, there's
the
like
music
weird
from the film, yeah, like the songs.
There's a lot, and there's a lot of stuff in there too, like songs that were like created just for the movie.
Right.
I think.
That's awesome. You know, I'm not really familiar with that one or the Rosemary's Baby one. I'm glad your list isn't my list, because that would have fell flat if we were like, oh, mine too. Would have been really short. That's cool, man. Yeah. Good movie, too.
The Fog.
Yeah, there's something creepy about Carrie. Of course, they remade it. It's probably terrible. I haven't seen it.
We just watched it.
The remake?
Watched it. You know, it's the girl that, the chick that played in, the Let Me In? Is that the American one?
Yeah.
She's Carrie in the newest rehash of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of these, like, I don't know. It's not like, it's not Carrie. But
yeah,
it was like, you could watch it. It was kind of fun in some ways. You know what they did with the new, like what Rob Zombie did with Halloween, where he like explained a bunch of the story before it got into the remake?
He made Michael Myers, who is an unexplainable evil in the original,
yeah,
which was scary enough. He just like, well, I'm going to make him
an abused,
a little boy who's abused by a terrible white trash family. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, my parents have been foster parents for, you know, since I was 4. And I've seen kids come into my house that I shared my family with that were way worse in situation. They came from a much more abusive situation than that. They didn't turn into Michael Myers. So
yeah.
Like, I just, to me, it just, I hated that explanation.
I think, yeah, they just couldn't.
But yeah, with Carrie, they did that with Carrie.
And there's, once again, there's that opening scene in the first Carrie movie that's just like, it sets the whole like tone for the film that I think they probably couldn't capture, because they do it in the movie, in the new movie, but it's like, I don't know. It's just It's just like weird teenagerness in the new one.
Yeah.
Like a bizarre teenage moment.
Yeah.
Where in the original one, it was just like, it's kind of hard to watch.
Well, they're trying to tell the story for like the new audience of young kids, and those kids are into like the cell phones and stuff, mm-hmm. and like so like all that stuff that like when I watch horror movies, that feel like they're of this time, and you know there's people with cell phones and stuff, and they're just building upon that like modern,
yeah,
information age type of thing. To me, it loses some of the magic for me, and I think it's because there's a nostalgic level to some of this stuff, and also because some of the stuff I find most endearing about these types of movies are like the just the way they look, sort of the time of filmmaking that it was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just not a fan of the newer stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I get that. And so they try to remake movies, and they're making them for different people. All right. Well, my number three is Ennio Morricone's score for John Carpenter's The Thing, which is it's interesting because a lot of people think that John Carpenter scored this movie because it is probably one of the most fully Carpenter-esque packages, where you know when you think of Carpenter through like Halloween or Escape from New York, The Fog, The Thing, Prince of Darkness, that sort of 80s era, he had a look and feel, and none was ever better than The Thing. Sound of the movie sounds just like a John Carpenter score, but it's not John Carpenter. It's Ennio Morricone, who's legendary. He's famous for doing all these spaghetti western scores and all these older films that are epic. And the dude just has a huge musical grammar. Like, it's odd that he would have done this film. But somehow, I call it a really good John Carpenter impression. Hmm. It's like if Ennio Morricone was like, what would I do to make a John Carpenter film?
Dude, I'm not going to lie. I haven't seen that movie since I was like 16,
what?
17.
Dude.
I know.
It's probably my favorite horror movie.
I
think they're an Antarctic research team. And they're like all inside this cold winter, like inside this hut, basically, this mm-hmm. little, you know, laboratory. And that's where they work. And they're already at each other's throats. They're having cabin fever. Throw in the fact that they have this alien discovery. They don't know what it is, and it's infecting their blood, and it's turning them into it's one of the most batshit crazy alien horror films you'll ever see in your life. The music just adds to the tension of that whole, you know. You could have had a movie just about those dudes stuck together in that place. And then you throw in the fact that they all lose their trust for each other because they don't know if the other person is the thing, and that's what's so scary about it. So that music just really sets the mood and just makes it freaking creepy. I love it. I wish I had that one on vinyl.
I'm sure they have it, right? They have to.
I should look.
Google.
What's your number two?
My number two. This was hard because it might be my number one, but I don't. Is the soundtrack, or is the score for Psycho.
Yeah, that is, like,
Bernard
absolutely
Herrmann.
Essential. For real.
There's just some scenes where, although it's Hitchcock, all that old Hitchcock stuff in general, like the birds and all that.
Yeah.
But there's something about, you know, everybody's familiar with the classic scenes. Because I bet most people probably haven't even seen Psycho. You know? But everybody knows all that stuff. But the music that, like, when she's, like, driving in her car, like, those in-between scenes, the way the music kind of sways.
The main theme, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I love that.
It's like, intense, but it's creepy. It's just a good...
Yeah, it's so freaking good.
really,
that's like,
it's well
that's
done.
Like so good. It should have, like, it's too good to be on the top five list. like that might be like the most important. Like, or yeah, that has to be
like
on
it's
the
not
top
even comparable. Yeah,
of the, you know, definitely the greatest.
It's one of those you list all the stuff and then you think about that song, the soundtrack and score to that, and you're like, oh, the other ones aren't really that good compared to, like, I was with Hardwired. I'm thinking of that soundtrack.
That's an amazing choice, and I would have it on my list if it weren't for the fact that I had to mention some other ones, but man, that is definitely an honorary mention. It probably should have been on my top three. Absolutely.
That
I think it might have something to do with, and I'm cheating a little bit, it might have something to do with the fact that Psycho is not one of my favorite horror movies. It's an amazing movie, and I love it, but, you know, I'm a little biased that I love scores and other movies together better than that.
When I was, young, I was, like, obsessed with all things Alfred Hitchcock. Like Alfred Hitchcock Presents, is that old TV show that was on?
Yeah, that's a really good show, actually.
And we went down to Disney, and they had this whole, like, or Universal Studios, wherever it is, or whichever one is, I don't know. But they had this whole, like, Alfred Hitchcock Presents thing, and they did, like, the tour through the birds and how they made it happen. And, man, I don't know. I love all that old Alfred Hitchcock stuff.
Absolutely, man. I do, too. Cool. Well, my number two is, I could have easily swapped this with number one, but I'll just say this is my number two, and that is Goblin. Goblin's out, the soundtrack for Suspiria, Dario Argento's Suspiria.
That almost made my list. It was very close to making my list.
Oh, man. What a freaking... See, what I love about this score is this is an Italian prog band. This is a band that, you know, a full, like, straight-up progressive rock band from Italy doing, you know, giallo film scores, you know, and they've done a lot of good ones. In fact, they actually did Dawn of the Dead soundtrack, the original George Romero's, and that's considered another fantastic one. And the reason why they were involved is because there are three cuts of three directors cut Dawn of the Dead, and so one of them was Dario Argento. So they scored that film, and they're just awesome. They're just you know, the movie's about a dance school that's run by a coven of witches. That's like the generic description. And so they make use of a lot of there's a lot of band instruments, a lot of drums and bass and guitar and vocals, but they do some really weird stuff. Metal sheets and just weird,
like twist frequencies and stuff. Like,
yeah, lots of effects and like some really tense sort of like creepy songs where like the vocalist sounds like he's kind of choking and like and just it's actually it has inspired bands like Seeker Chiefs 3, Trace Brunts from Mr. Bungle, and you know he's done a lot of work with the Seeker Chiefs 3 that has some similarities to it. Goblin's just considered like this legendary prog band that broke up so many years ago. Well, they recently reformed and have been hitting they've been touring a lot, and they've been coming to America quite often and playing a lot of their score music live and writing new music and just sort of like they're playing like Maryland Death Fest this coming year, and you know they're just sort of a part of the metal scene, and it's kind of interesting, and it's a lot of the original people. So but man, Suspiria, just amazing to look at. The colors are really cool. It has this really weird style to it, and it's real beautiful looking, and the music is just,
I think that's
freaking awesome.
Might be on Netflix right now too.
All right, here's the thing,
The Craft.
Huh?
The Craft, is that what you mean?
Yeah. No. See, here's the thing. I have not listed a very obvious choice, and neither have you.
That's correct.
And I think that we maybe have the same movie for our number one. So, what is your number one? Let's just list it.
Legally Blonde.
Oh, wow. I had Legally Blonde, too. Weird, man.
This is crazy. Halloween.
Of course. Rob Zombies.
Rob Zombies Halloween. More human than human.
Oh,
what, that was in the movie? No, it wasn't.
White trash. Yeah, man. John Carpenter's Halloween, like Jaws, this is the one I kept referencing to. Like Jaws, if you were to take the music away from this movie, it just wouldn't work at all. And in fact, I know that they did a test screening without the film's music, and apparently people just, like, hated it. It just did not work at all. The music literally, like, put the tension into the film.
It's probably boring.
Yeah, without the music, right?
Like, it's just a dude walking around.
It? I mean, yeah, because there's so many creepy shots in it, but without any music, it just...
Just a couple hours of a guy walking through a neighborhood.
Yeah. a couple hours of this dude just walking around.
You know, driving a station wagon and then just
walking around, creeping. Standing behind bushes.
Yeah. At Halloween with a mask on.
Yeah.
What's scary about that? That's what everybody does at Halloween.
That's funny. So, do you have anything to say about the score?
I got sidetracked.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Halloween. What can you say about...
Well, I mean, it's an interesting...
The most iconic movie... Music for this. I mean, it makes the season.
It perfectly embodies everything I love about the season, for sure.
And there's those little just moments of weird. Ba-da-da!
Yeah, a lot of the stingers are really good in it. And a lot of the just, I mean, like John Carpenter, apparently, when he was a little kid, I guess his dad taught him some music notes or something, or rhythms or something, and he. On a drum, and he kind of remembered that and sort of did that on that rhythm on a piano, and it just sort of like unlocked some creative genius in the guy. And he, what's so cool is he's the guy who created these movies, John Carpenter's The Fog, John Carpenter's Halloween. He's writing and directing and scoring these movies, and I mean, if you Google greatest film scores. Of all time, you're gonna find John Carpenter on there several times, and I mean, he's made easily two of the top five for me. I would say Halloween 2 is that he also scored is equally as good, but it borrows from a lot of the same themes. But yeah, man, just a perfect movie and a perfect soundtrack that just kind of like really just embodies everything about a creepy. Non-graphic. It's not really a graphic blood fest. It's not like all the things that horror movies became after that. It's just a really classic creepy movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's the kind of thing, it's sort of an entry level for people who aren't into horror movies. It's that perfect movie where you're like, you know, you can kind of relate to this, the fear in this movie. The scares in this work on a level for everybody.
Yeah, that like there might be someone looking in your window.
Yeah.
Like right now. Like maybe right now.
Right now we're on this deck. Somebody's behind my pool.
Looking, yeah. Or while you're listening. Yeah, you're someone is probably looking in your window. Right. You know what? They're probably like driving to work and this isn't like...
Tomorrow when I come out here at like 7 o'clock in the morning and it's going to be all dark. I'll be like remembering your words.
That there was someone... You're going to look out here tonight, and there's just going to be a dude standing here with, like, a donkey head on staring at you.
Oh, it's so creepy. Dude, just picture this. Say, we're looking at a giant cornfield right now. Just imagine, like, the moonlight down there is, like, a dude just standing there looking at us. That would be so creepy.
just like 50 kids running in all white.
Yeah, man.
With their eyes glowing or something.
Sometimes I think like that.
Children in the corn.
Just imagine like...
Like the Village of the Damned type.
What's that?
Like the Children in the Corn, like the Village of the Damned type of...
Well, just picture like somebody like completely just standing down there staring right at you. That would be really creepy.
With like goat horns.
All right, I'm going in. Not this joke. Cool, man. Any honorary mentions? Anything on your list that should be mentioned that wasn't on your top five?
Yeah. The Omen?
Oh, yeah, totally. Jerry Goldsmith, The Omen. So good that Fantomas and Mike Patton covered that. Yeah, that is... That's actually worthy of the top five as well, I think.
Yeah.
For sure, man.
It is a creepy... I mean, it's everything that you would expect from the sonic boom of what the Catholic Church should be.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my gosh.
But it kind of has that, you know, like...
Leave it to Scott.
It's got that whole, like... It's the Latin chanting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you just get that vibe of, like... You know. First... communion or something.
Yeah.
I just assume. I don't know. I'm not Catholic. I just assume that's the music they play during your first communion in a Catholic church. Is it not? No?
Another honorary mention would be... another honorary mention would be The Shining for me.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
That, what, how do you say that? Dies... Ira or Ira? How do you say that? It's Day of Wrath.
Diverticulitis?
That is a horror right there. No. And I'm not sure who wrote it. Yeah, I don't know who wrote it. I kind of looked it up earlier and I don't see it. So, that's a really good score. What about Phantasm? Do you like Phantasm's score?
Oh, man, I don't know that one enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies that's like hit or miss with people, but, yeah, I like the score for that. Yeah. So, yeah, those are some good film scores, and we could probably have another conversation about soundtracks.
Yeah, that's
horror movie soundtracks.
That's what made it hard, because we just said we were going to do scores.
Yeah.
But there's so many solid horror movies that have, like, soundtracks and stuff that, like we talked, like Scream. It's got a good soundtrack.
Yeah.
You know,
but we didn't talk about that, did we?
No.
We talked about the scores.
Or, like, you know, the all, like, the later Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Oh, jeez.
Some solid music there. Dream Warrior, you know?
Oh, yeah, man. Or what's that one with the Fat Boys? Are You Ready for Freddy?
Wait, oh, wasn't there
a... We should have a chat about those movies.
Oh, Will Smith? That's my nightmare.
Nightmare on my street.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's a good idea. We should play that. Cool. You got anything else you want to add to this segment?
No, not right now.
Cool.
We're good. Well, that was good. Some good stuff there.
Well, we will be back right after this.
Para todos los zombies de la cumbia, cumbia zombie.
one of the frightened. Do you whistle past the graveyard? Well, then perhaps you're really like the rest of us. So come with me. Just a short ride through the hills past the old burial grounds where Count Alexis met the lady in the long, flowing bay. The famous castle of the Alexis family had long towered on the hillside in the Bavarian valley. Count Alexis himself, the last surviving member of the historic clan, was tall and handsome and kind. Indeed, the only wonder in the village was, when would he marry and raise a son to continue the glory of his ancestors? And then one storm-tossed night, when he was out on the marshes with his hunting dog, Alexis saw a tall, beautiful, dark-haired woman in a long, flowing veil walking across the meadows towards him. It seemed her carriage had overturned on the bridge and crashed into the raging waters of the Casny River. Her driver and horses had perished, but she had managed to save herself. The Count had already surrendered to the romance of their meeting, but only the hound dog seemed to whimper and growl and behave badly whenever the lady drew near him. But the Count insisted that the lady be his guest and took her straight to his castle. Within a fortnight, Alexis had wooed and won her, and the village celebrated the wonderful news. Alexis would have an heir. But in the days preceding the marriage, the young Count seemed to be failing in health. He lost weight so that his uniform seemed to hang on him. And curiously enough, to the staff of the castle, Sonia, their future mistress, fairly glowed with health since her ordeal in the river. But when no one could recall seeing her in the daytime, rumors began to spread. The old wives' tales about vampires who stalk at night and sleep in the daytime swept through the village like wildfire. And finally, up in the master bedroom where he lay exhausted, Count Alexis himself had to credit the rumors. How else this sudden loss of weight and failing health? And why should Sonia's blooming good health coincide exactly with the loss of his own vitality? Count Alexis made up his mind. He pulled the bell cord by his bed and summoned his manservant. When the fellow appeared, the Count asked that his fiancée be brought to him. But the servant shook his head. The Lady Sonia had gone out before dawn, riding off to the west, as was her usual custom. Count Alexis had heard enough. He dressed, armed himself with a short dagger, and ordered his fastest horse. He thundered down the castle road off to the west, towards the very spot where he had first met Sonia. The meadows were barren, and darkness was coming on. The Count led his horse carefully over the hilly ground. Finally, he found what he was looking for. A stone slab set in the earth, covered over with vines and leaves. Triumphantly, he dragged it to one side, and looking down, he could just make out an open coffin with Sonia lying in it, her pale beauty and blood-red lips gleaming in the dying light. Alexis drew his dagger and raised it for the kill. It is said the only way that you can kill a vampire is a stake through the heart while it sleeps. But suddenly, the dagger fell from his hands and a slow, eerie smile played over his face. Like a stone man, he settled down beside her to wait for the vampire's hour. For he had learned Sonia's secret too late to stop him from becoming a vampire himself. See now, my friend? See? Those two bats wheeling through the darkness? It's Sonia and Count Alexis winging through the night and waiting for the chance to assume human form again. You don't believe me? Well, I'm sorry. The people of the village will believe nothing else. My, 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 but you do have a soft, delicate throat.
Thank you. I got a story.
Okay. I like okay. that.
I'll make it short. But the first time I saw The Shining was at a Lutheran youth group.
There has I don't to know. Be more to that story.
It was...
Is this another one of those Hell's Bells things?
No, they actually showed The Shining right, Hell's Bells in things. Youth group. At this, I went with my friend Drew, who I rode skateboards with and played music with when I was younger, and it was his church, and we went, and they played The Shining, and it scared the crap out of me.
What? How old were you?
I don't know. Was I 14, maybe? 15? I don't know. Something like that. But I hadn't really watched scary movies, and I was pretty sheltered. Well, we also didn't have Netflix and all that crap, right? So right. I watched The Shining, and looking back, I'm like, who in the... Like, that wouldn't have never happened nowadays, because there'd be too many committees and, like, parents figuring out. But the priest or whoever it was that showed it had this great discussion afterwards about faith and art and horror and all these things. It was pretty progressive.
Nice. Well, I'll say two things to that. One, The Shining is probably the scariest movie I've ever seen. Just the implications of that movie really get under my skin and creep me out. And two, that what you just said is a perfect segue. I want to actually pick your brain about some of that stuff. And
words of wisdom, Jeff. Words yeah. of wisdom.
Primarily, I don't know anything about you in terms of harm, what you're into in terms of Halloween and stuff like that. But I had a conversation with you, and I don't remember exactly when, but we were talking online sometime, and we were talking about having liberty in Christ to enjoy things that aren't necessarily what people would deem Christian art, music, movies, whatever. We kind of started like talking
that,
about it.
Apparently, that Lutheran church had a pretty loose grasp on what they were doing. Sorry.
Yeah, they were progressive. Mm. Yes.
Yeah. But I'm just curious. First of all, Halloween is just like my favorite time of the year. I just love it. I don't know why. It's just, I think it's just also the weather, the time of the year. Here in Pennsylvania, we get like this beautiful, cold, crisp air. And I don't know how Seattle works in October, but... You know, it's a very autumn, just what you see in the films, you know, like Halloween, the movie Halloween, you know, the windy leaves.
Everything tastes good, and the neighbors give me Kit Kats.
Pumpkin flavored everything. Yeah, yeah. So, I just love this time of year all around, and I enjoy, you know, Halloween. And I'm throwing it over to you. Travis isn't the biggest Halloween fan, although I don't...
Oh, I love Halloween. I don't like horror movies because I'm a chicken shit. Okay.
That's a whole different thing.
I'm just throwing it out there.
So, the thing is, though, I don't know a lot of people, Christian or non, who actually give a shit about Halloween. So, my question to you, first of all, like, what does Halloween mean to you? And second of all, what do you do with that?
Well,
good question.
I like some of the aesthetics that happen on Halloween, but I don't really like Halloween at all.
Okay.
I have never been a fan. It's mostly because...
This conversation is going to fall flat. Okay, go ahead.
I'm glad we called you for the Halloween episode.
It won't.
I'm not joking.
I like... So, I've been watching, you know, I've been watching The Walking Dead since it first came out, and it's one of the best shows ever made, in my opinion. And
agreed.
I love the aesthetics. The storyline's great. Everything is, it's just really good. And I've always enjoyed zombie movies. I used to really like vampire stuff and was way into, when I was a kid, the Anne Rice books. You know, Tom Cruise is a vampire. So awesome. Just kidding. Yeah. Anyways, but...
Sold it.
The Vampire Lestat, that was the one,
it's
right?
Like Top Gun vampire movie.
Yeah, totally. It's bizarre.
Top Gun.
They do such a... it's not much better. Like, now, looking back at vampires, like, zombies are the thing, because zombies are way cooler, in my opinion, because nobody's made I don't know. There's not very many good vampire movies. They're all like lovey-dovey, like all the new stuff. Just, you know, Twilight's dumb.
Oh, dude, don't get me started on that.
I don't put them in my list of things to see.
The story's based in
they play baseball. My area
where I grew up in. So I grew up in Port Angeles, which is really close to Forks, and actually they come at one point to where I grew up. So I've watched them all just basically because I think it's filmed in Vancouver, BC, or maybe in some other town south of where it's actually located, but the book and the location is in Forks, Washington. So I've watched it because I grew up and familiar with that, but it wasn't good.
I almost watched Walking one Dead's of them. Great.
Jeff, let's try something real quick. Let's quiz Steven. Steven, when a vampire gets exposed to sunlight, what happens?
I don't know. There's a million different movies. They evaporate and turn into black soot. I don't know.
Yes,
basically bad things happen to vampires.
Bad things happen to vampires.
Are you sure they don't? You sure they don't sparkle and look shiny and extra sexy?
Listen, here's the thing. I almost watched Twilight, and here's why. Peter Murphy is in one of those movies.
Who gives a shit? Vampires don't sparkle in sunlight. Vampires don't play baseball.
I give a shit because I love Peter Murphy. But I decided to take the higher road and say that I just lost respect for Peter Murphy, and I'm not going to watch that.
Change the story. Change it now while you can. No, I personally, I don't know when it happened, but at some point I just stopped caring about Halloween. I think it was how I see everybody go bonkers on Halloween and get all dressed up. And the older I got, it seemed like it was every single time there was. I used to live in the U District for a while, and every time all the young gals dressed exactly the same, as sleazy as possible. And,
I was gonna say like sluts.
Yeah.
And all the guys just tried to do something scary, and it was like, this is such BS. Like I kind of look like a freak half the time, all the time, and this is just a bunch of crap and an excuse for somebody to dress up. But every other rest of the day of the year, if I'm going to be drawn to something, it's definitely going to have an appeal that would be acceptable on Halloween. That's the irony. So I definitely like dark, creepy imagery and you know, drink the blood for eternal life. That resonates with me in a lot of ways. So does like resurrection of the dead. That resonates with me in a ton of ways.
It's very similar, isn't it?
You want to hear something interesting? You want to hear something interesting about me?
Yes.
Maybe you don't. I don't know. Let's say it anyway.
I do.
Being raised the way that I was told that there's no Santa Claus, there's no Easter Bunny, there's none of that stuff. I wasn't allowed to trick or treat. It was all of the devil, and I never, ever, 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 ever participated in it at all. I never trick or treated one time. Not that I remember anyway. And I just thought, well, that's pretty gross, and I'm not going to do that to my kids. So I didn't get into trick-or-treating until I could actually walk my own kids. I don't dress up, but I actually walk my own kids around, and I see their eyes light up, and I explain to them that, you know, we can go down this road of how I was told that, like, the jack-o'-lantern there was a guy named Jack, and he had to light his way through hell. So he hollowed out a gourd and put in a candle, and it's all pagan and it's all satanic and it's devil.
How the hell did you hear that?
Your aunt. Yeah. So I was just raised to think this stuff was all evil, 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 and I didn't get into it until I have twins, and they're 13, and I have an 8-year-old. So my twins started trick or treating. First year out of the gate, we dressed him up like Mike Wazowski from Monsters, Inc. We threw him in a wagon and just threw candy on him. We're like, just sit still. Don't fall out of the wagon. Here's a Kit Kat. And every year, watching them grow into it, kind of get into it and everything, I felt like I'm kind of connecting myself to culture. And I always thought that was kind of an interesting conversation to have with people, because when I tell them, I was basically told from the get-go, look, man, there's no Santa Claus. And I was the 7-year-old that was like, guys, this is stupid. You're writing letters to your parents. There's no Santa Claus. And I'd make like making girls cry and stuff. And I'm like, what? This is, I'm telling you, this is the truth. My parents told me. And I always felt like so disconnected for it. And I was always, and now I'm 40 years old and I tell people this story and they look at me like I had lobsters crawling out of my ears. They look at me like I'm crazy. Like, are you kidding? You never believed in Santa Claus? Well, no, dude.
That's funny.
And,
well, the thing is,
I'm just getting into Halloween now because of my kids. I never got to do it.
Yeah. See, I was told in my church, we were told obviously that it was like a satanic holiday and all that. And, you know, Mike Warnke was like famous back then about, you know, he was talking about Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, how the satanic people, all that satanic panic stuff is like where I, obviously, I think we all can relate to that. But, my church was just, you know, not quite as extreme as playing The Shining in a Lutheran church, but we had the Hell's Bells videos and the Rock and Roll Search for God videos. And so most of the music that I got exposed to and loved came from these videos where they were telling us
being told not to.
I mean, I remember hearing The Cure's The Blood on this VHS tape, and they're, you know, I'm paralyzed by the blood of Christ, though it clouds my eyes, I can never stop. And I remember I just remember thinking there was something so creepy about the way that music sounded and the way he sang it, because I'm hearing it in the 80s and I'm only, you know, 12 or something, you know, so I'm hearing it and I'm thinking, like, there's something attractive about that. And the back masking stuff was in these videos, and I remember just being fascinated by it, and it actually drew me to the things that I wasn't supposed to do. And I actually, it's funny you brought up The Shining, because I remember sneaking The Shining on TV when I was a kid. And when the scene where Jack Nicholson goes into the room and the old lady emerges from the tub, that destroyed me. I like ran up my stairs. I was like horrified by that scene, but it just kept making me want more and more, because it's that attraction to the entertainment, right? The sort of the thrill of it. And I just never bought into the fact that it was evil to, or affecting me in a way that was going to, you know, make me evil, or, you know, demons and all that stuff. So, Jeff, what I'm getting at here
is he still here?
Yep.
Okay. What's your take on all that? Like, first of all, were you part of that whole satanic panic movement? And what do you say to people who still feel that way about that?
Say that again. The satanic panic?
Satanic panic, do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah. I've watched those Hell's Bells videos, and I watched them when I already listened to most of the music on there and thought it was awesome. So I was sitting there laughing the entire time. And you know, like, what do you say when they play Bauhaus Stigmata Martyr? And it's like...
Oh, that's one of my favorite songs from them, too.
Yeah. And you're like, you were just listening to that on the way. So it's kind of funny. I think that stuff is not looking at Christ as king of the universe and able to deal with stuff. I think it's more based out of fear. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I guess it also leads to the disconnect that makes Christians think that they need to be like the guy on The Simpsons. The next door neighbor,
Flanders.
Flanders, yeah.
Yeah, Flanders. Oakley Doakley. Like that. Everything needs to be okay, which it totally misses at least half, if not three quarters of, probably more. Probably like 15/16 of biblical content, which is mourning and sorrowful and despairing and deep with richness of the complexities of life.
Yeah.
And so somehow people got this thing that was this war mind mentality of like us against them, like Satan versus Jesus. But as far as I know, on our narrative, like Christ said it was finished and he already won. So there's really nothing to be afraid of. Now, I do believe in the supernatural, not that dissimilar to some of the ways that even like I'm not super charismatic, but I have experienced enough in my life that I believe it in the ways of that some people who are in those circles extrapolate it, but I don't think it's a I don't think it's something that you should mess around with. I also don't think it's something that's inherently scary or built into what's perceived to be dark imagery. Like, that is just not true. Like, a story about the undead has a lot of elements that can be expounded on in a Christian context. I mean, even look at, like, the Orthodox faith and, like, the images for, like, Orthodox priests, especially, like, in Russia. Like, they wear all black. They have these ridiculous big beards and hats. They're usually surrounded in somewhere in their monastery by, like, a pile of human skulls that make something. There's a lot of mystery around transfiguration and all of that kind of stuff. It's all there, all the mystery and all the dark elements that are present within modern context of horror and whatnot are built into our faith. I mean, they're right there, like the Valley of Dry Bones. Like, that is totally all about reanimated corpses resurrecting from the dead and forming an army. Like, that's well, how Evil Dead is that.
Right. Well, I get that, but are you saying that that it's important to sort of I don't want to say spiritualize it, but like, are you saying that it's important to connect the dark? Like, it seems like you're taking the approach of like finding parallels between Christian things in the Bible that are similar to the stories that are told in horror tales and stuff like that. Like, I agree with that, but I'm wondering, do we spiritualize it so much? Can we coexist separating the two completely? Like, what do you say to someone who just loves like dark stuff, dark art, music, lyrics that are just like, you know, like there are bands that are demonically inspired. I think bands like going back to Swans and stuff like that, I think those guys are kind of demonically inspired, or at least some of their stuff seemed that way to me. And there's something attractive to when Jira is like yelling, you know, he's sort of yelling in this one song where he's like, he's yelling to Jesus, like, Jesus, come down. And it's like, I'm not listening to a Christian song here. I'm listening to this dude, like, just screaming, like, to Jesus, come down, you know, reveal yourself, you know, in this one. I don't know what the song is, I forget. But when I hear that, I get almost like a dark feeling. Like this dude's like, it almost came off to me as like darkness, like evil. Like, I don't know. Like, that's how I interpreted that sort of the way he delivers that song. Do you know what song I'm talking about?
If you're talking about the song from the Children of God, where in the middle he says, what does he say?
Praise, he like literally
praise God, and
yeah, he's screaming
these things. I actually, is it Sex God Sex? I think that's the name of the song.
I think so. Yeah, and I do think you got the right album where
he does stuff like that, but it's multiple, and I think he's probably got a very complex relationship with Jesus Christ. I think that he probably has a lot of tremendous amount of respect for the stories in the Bible.
Right.
I know that particular record was written specifically with a fascination that he had with televangelism, and he specifically spent a lot of time from reading interviews and stuff. I used to be pretty nerd fanboy, and from my understanding is a lot of that content was he got from for Children of God. He got from watching many, 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 many hours of sermons and televangelists speaking, and I also him in particular, I can't answer for other people, and I can't even answer for him, but I have a feeling that he would be closer to a Christian than many people would assume to think.
I agree. I was using in, but my example was just that there's music that I listen to that I can get a sense, maybe that wasn't a very good example, but there's examples where it's just straight up like demonically inspired, you know, or their imagery, their symbolism appears to be.
Neurosis is pretty straightforward about their muse. They've talked about how it's otherworldly and it comes to them in some sort of sense, and they sort of create what's already there. They've talked in some weird ways about their art that sound more mystical in a realm of tapping into some sort of spiritual thing. And to me, that could be more demonically influenced in some ways, but I don't really know. I'm not really positive because they're still human beings, but I have seen, okay, so this is where it gets weird, and some people believe me, some people don't, but I'm pretty candid about it and I can't explain it, but I have actually witnessed the manifestation of a demon in a human being, and it's something that I never want to see again, and I don't, so I believe in the supernatural in ways that are very similar to like I was listening to Alan's podcast. In some ways, like when he speaks about that stuff, I like don't like it, but I like will, yeah, there's something I don't know here that I don't know about necessarily all the authority and supernatural things that he talks about, but I've experienced them in such weird, strange ways that I can't explain. So part of me believes that, right? So I would believe that something could be demonically influenced, and yet there's a huge disconnect in my person that says, no, they're just human beings, and I'm going to take it at that, and I would end up relating it, like, so when Neurosis talks like that, I wouldn't necessarily first come up with saying that, well, it's a demon that they're worshiping and that it's inspiring. I'd be thinking that they're going through some sort of creative process, and the God of the universe, who knows all things, is also present with them, whether they know him or not, because he is the God and he holds all things together. And I would be much more generous with those things. And even like saying something like a cannibal corpse, right? Like their songs, like they're just a horror movie. That's it. And it's grotesque. And
yeah, exactly.
It's interesting to listen to. Or Whitechapel. Now there's something. They're just like a bunch of white guys trying to be dirty, gross, and evil for no reason. Like just because they want to be. So they're singing about this stuff. I don't even know if they know it. Like,
let me.
So Slayer, now there's an interesting one because they're totally trying to be demonic, but yet they end up sounding half the time like the Book of Revelation and sound more Christian than not. Like, there's an interesting
one. Well, they have a lot of metaphors, too, to more political points, too.
That is like, true.
Like Angel of Death is a lot about, you know, I think about Nazi Germany and all that stuff, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, here's an example. Rosemary's Baby. I'm just like trying to get a very specific, you know, or you know, films like that are like, you know, they're just blatantly putting out a very
Exorcist.
The Exorcist.
My least favorite horror film. I can never watch it, and I've never finished it because, you know, stabbing yourself in the vagina with a crucifix yelling "Let Jesus fuck me" is pretty like disturbing to me in a way that I just can't reconcile.
Okay, so you do have a line that you draw and say, okay, there's a point like where
William S. Burroughs, I can't handle it either. Like, I try certain Burroughs books. I've read, I've never finished The Naked Lunch, and yet I've read it like 5 times, and there's always one point. Every time, it's the same damn point in that story where I just put it down and say, I'm not even interested anymore. Like, this is just too, and it's not offensive because of my faith, it's offensive because I'm a human being and there's something, I can't get past it, and I'm not saying that it makes other people less, but there is certain, those two things, that's it, and I don't know what it is about those two things, I enjoy everything else up until those points, and then I'm just like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to watch this. I don't want to leave.
I don't know what it is. Yeah. I think that whether you're a Christian, whether you're not, really isn't the issue. I think because you're hitting on the other point, and that is that, like, there's a non-Christian side to it. Like, there's a side to it that, regardless of faith, like, you just have a moral compass, you know, or you just feel like, you know, I'm not trying to Christianize this story. I just don't want to go there. But apart from all of that, what I'm trying to say is, like, you know, if you're drawn to certain things, even a band's T-shirt. Another example would be there's a clothing line called Actual Pain.
Yeah.
They have some of the coolest looking T-shirts, but every single T-shirt is blatantly satanic imagery. I mean, straight up, like, there's just no hiding it. Regardless of how serious they are about it, it doesn't matter. It's a symbolism. It's something that when you're walking around, people are going to look at that. They're not going to see Christ in it, obviously. They're just going to look at it and go, okay, that dude's in this evil stuff. But I can't help but be drawn to it for my tastes, what I love about it. And I could say that about music, movies, art, just in general. I'm a person who's drawn to stuff like that. And what I try to make sense of is, like, you know, it's funny, I can go to a concert, like, again, Swans or Cannibal Corpse or some, whatever, list any sort of band that's oppressive and dark or whatever, and I can stand there at their show and literally, like, immerse myself in the experience and have this emotional effect from it at the exact same time, literally be praying in my mind to, you know, praying to God, like, for that person. I'm watching them perform and I'm enjoying their concert, and at the same time I'm like, going, Jesus, like, reveal yourself to this guy. He really needs you. Like, and I can still enjoy them. And I've always found that to be kind of a weird. It's not something you hear about from other people very often.
No.
I don't know. I guess I just try to. I'm fascinated with the split that I have in my own life, which is like I have no interest in surrounding myself with Christianized versions of things. And you know, I certainly love certain Christian music. I don't think I like any Christian movies. But, you know, I have no interest in Christianizing everything and making things, excuse me, look a certain way that's Christ-like, or, you know, taking the black out of black metal, for example, or making it white metal and all that. You know, all that sort of twisting things around into Christianity. I don't connect to any of that. It's like I have two separate lives. I have my faith, and then I have what I'm into. And I don't see any parallels. And I just wonder what you think about that. Like, what, you know, is it – obviously, we have limits. There are certain things we can – I don't like certain sexually explicit things in horror, like what you just said about The Exorcist. That's not a scene I need to see. But
it's weird.
It doesn't really affect my spirit. It too.
They wear crosses. It's like – freaking well, advertising yes. The electric chair. They're like into this drinking blood and eating flesh. Like, there's some weird stuff about Christianity that if they actually, like, paid attention to, they'd have to deal with the horror and atrocity of the reality that we believe in a God who, in all the world's terms, was an absolute loser and was killed and murdered. Like, there's nothing on an upward trajectory towards glory in the life of Jesus Christ. But he resurrected from the dead, conquering it. Like, that's a crazy... That's the fairy tale stuff that we believe out of some sort of radical supernatural faith that is, like, the same thing in present in horror films and fantasy films. Like, they're all... They have a similarity for this, like, unbelievable thing that generally in most horror films, not all, but in most, there's a good triumphing over evil aspect to them. There's a generally, not all the time, there's a few that probably, I can't think of any right now, but generally most of them end up with some sort of positive conclusion or an allusion to it. You know what else was really hard for me to see? Was The Omen. Did you see those?
Oh yeah, yeah.
The Omen movies, those are the first ones. Really, really. I haven't watched it for years. It's probably easier now, but when I was a kid, I had a hard time seeing that because I didn't want to see a kid be Satan. It was much more difficult than a lot of the, like, I don't like it. I guess my lines are like, I really don't like it, seeing people being tortured horribly. Like the movie Saw, yeah, I watched yeah. all of them, and I found them entertaining. Really? Yes, I've seen all of them.
All
and
seven found, of those movies?
Maybe I've only seen four or five. I probably lost count at some point. But yeah. I watched them because there was other things about it that I found interesting, like the play on the whole thing and the way – like mm-hmm. I wanted to see who it was, and I wanted to see it get captured, and I wanted to see that, the ending, like played out over and over again. Mm-hmm. But and the torture was so fabricated and not quite right. It was like Hollywood torture. But when they make it so that it's more grotesque and realistic, I can't stand it. Like it's like, ugh. And sometimes it's necessary in a horror movie to show the sort of violence that's happening. So there's something about it. But I usually see these deeper things in these movies about human interaction mm-hmm. playing out. And there's some things. But I don't really like... abuse of kids that bothers me when that's in shows. I mean, obviously nobody likes it, but I'm saying when it's in a show as entertainment, because those are supposed to be entertaining. There's something in my heart that wrenches at some of these shows and the way that some stuff has gone that I've noticed some just like unconsensual like BDSM and like other things like that it's just so like. Yeah. Some of that stuff drives me bonkers, but stuff when it's like vampires and zombies and werewolves and more fantasy sort of driven horror, mm-hmm. I like better. So even bands like that, like I was never, like I get like some of the metal stuff that like is just shock value crap, but that I'm not that interested. And I've never been a huge Cannibal Corpse fan because it doesn't do anything to me, and I'd rather listen to like. I don't know, something a little more, like Neurosis, their stuff is pretty deep and spiritual and heavy and intellectual, and you can engage in it in a different way. And there's a lot of horror movies like that, even just The Walking Dead. Like, I can't believe it's on TV with all the gore, but the way that the people interact with each other and do all that stuff, like the dialogue, the writing, it's so deep and profound. It's really good. And I even think that is present in a lot of the old, like, be more horror movies and stuff like that, and it's just interesting to see how like now that I'm talking about it, how I feel like I draw lines, and it's not a condemning line because I think that you can use those things for good, but I don't know, when it comes to entertainment, I definitely am drawn to darker imagery. I don't know, like, well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, in some cases, like, we seem really drawn toward, like, the protagonists in films. Like, you know, we watch, the Halloween movie because we love watching what, you know, Michael Myers is going to do, or Jason Voorhees or something. This is just an example. But we just go, it's just a movie. It's just, like, this fun thing. This killer is walking around, stalking people. It's scary, whatever. But then in real life, there are real examples where that crap happens to people, you know? And we because it's a movie, we find it entertaining, but if in real life we don't find it entertaining, we find it tragic. I think there's something there that I just can't figure out, and I just am always fascinated by that idea.
I don't know. I've always felt like my pull for discern, my mom used to call it my spirit for discernment, was set. Well, I don't want to say higher because that comes across like mine's above or better, and I don't mean it like that. I just mean like shit bothers me quicker than it does you when it comes to horror movies and gore and that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
I just can't. There's something about it that just. For lack of a better way to put it, it just comes against my spirit. There's like I'm being convinced 700 times by 700 different people how great of a movie American Psycho is, and I've gotten halfway to three quarters of the way through it about three times, and I'm like, I don't want to watch this. I'm just not interested.
Yeah. No, I understand.
It's just not.
I like that movie.
Yeah, I something I about understand. It. I just felt like
I do too. But yuck. But
it's just
but,
too.
But there's stuff
gross.
In it that
it
I
yucky. Yeah,
it's exactly.
Gross and yucky. I don't know what it is either. Like there's something about it that it's enjoyable to watch. And it doesn't change that I'm a human being and I'm interacting in these ways. And it doesn't change my faith. Actually, I think it might, in some ways, help me to see some stuff in a whole different light that some other people might. There's no reason to avoid it, but there's also no reason to glorify it. And there's also no reason to participate in it if you don't like it. Like Travis, mm-hmm. I don't like this, so I don't want to. Yeah, totally. If you don't like something... don't participate in it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Weird that
I'm referring to people who are drawn to it, though. That, you know, like I'm drawn.
Yeah,
to
there's
it.
Nothing. I think that part of that compass is internal, and God made us that way, and it will have a profound effect and mean something in our lives at different times. And there's nothing wrong with it. God made us that way to make for us to think that everybody shouldn't or should think that it's all right for them is. Would be presumptuous, mm-hmm. But for other people to think that you can't, as a Christian, you can't watch, you know, whatever it is that you're gonna, including like here's a weird thing, like there's ultimate like a bunch of reasons why you shouldn't watch horror movies, there's a bunch of reasons why you shouldn't watch movies that are called Christian, including by music that's called Christian. I could tell you a lot of reasons why you shouldn't do that. So the thing works both ways, and each one of them can probably be pointed out ethically and biblically of why you shouldn't. I would relate to the films and the music as, you know, Jesus chasing people in the temple with a whip and kicking over their tables because it seems like they're using faith as a exploitation specifically to make money. So it seems more horrible than just being a part of an industry. It seems like it's using those things and exploiting them specifically mm-hmm. to sell and make money. And I don't like that. So at the same time, it's probably not good if watching horror films desensitizes you to humanity and the thing around you. It's different if you're an empathetic person who has compassion and cares and you just enjoy that aesthetic and you're watching it and suddenly you're, oh man, you know, like you feel more suddenly for those who are abused or who are belittled, or you feel more strong about the complexities around the supernatural that oftentimes those things showcase. Because, you know, like I said, I believe that demon possession is real, and I believe that I bore witness to that first person, and it's crazy stuff.
Wow.
And I don't want to ever have to deal with that again, but now when I see those things, I have a different perspective on it, and my heart breaks for the person who is tormented. I think there's some interesting things about all this, and I don't know exactly where to go, but there's nothing wrong with me for enjoying these aesthetics. There's something in me that's wired to enjoy that. And I don't know what it is. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think it makes me more hard-hearted or complacent or violent or anything. I don't think that it does that. And yeah. I think that if I'm completely wrong, certainly the grace of God is sufficient for me. But I don't think that everybody should be like Ned Flanders. Like, I just don't think that that's true. And I don't think that the Bible thinks that's true or shows it. I mean, Paul was beaten and humiliated and over and over and over again, and so was Christ, right? Like, it's not a trajectory towards comfort or a happy life without problems. It's actually Christianity is much more about a life that's antithetical to comfort, which is crazy. I mean, even me talking about earlier, or at some point, whenever, about Jesus. And to actually live his ways, you'd probably be a homeless person wandering around talking about God the Father and how good he is in the midst of your homelessness. With like that's we don't even think about that. But the truth is we're here, and if those things are going to cause you some sort of life-giving sentiment that makes you think about your faith in God and all these other things, then it's good. It's great. Like, yeah, here's the skulls.
Yep. Yeah, man. Was there anything else you want to add to it?
That I've wasted my life watching that movie, Dead Alive, more than any other film.
Oh, I love Dead Alive. All right,
let
me ask.
That movie is the worst movie ever made, and I too love it. Oh my gosh, man! The amount of blood and the weird lawnmower scene. Yeah. Oh, it's just it's absurd.
Yeah, yeah.
That movie is ridiculous. It's hard to believe that it's Peter Jackson.
Oh, absolutely. That one! I
know. Lord it's of the like Rings Meet guy. The Feebles.
What's? Oh, well, that one I could skip. Yeah. So, what's your favorite horror movie? It's curious.
Oh my gosh! It probably actually is The Shining. I just that movie's so good.
See, isn't that crazy? I'm a self-admitted chicken shit, if you wind it back. I'm not one that elevates to horror movies. I see scary stuff, and I'm just like, nah, I don't think I'm going to like that. I'm not really into that. And it isn't that, like, when I saw The Ring, I didn't actually think there was a little ghost girl living in a well that was going to climb out of my TV. But
the movie... You haven't seen my well. Go on.
But the movie startled me. And there were scary scenes in that and everything, which disturbs my sleep. Like it makes me, like it makes a grown ass man wake up and go, whew, man, that was some wild stuff that was going on in my brain while I was asleep, you know. Yet The Shining, I've watched The Shining 100 times in my life. It doesn't affect me that way. It is scary. It is definitely creepy. I don't like the chick in the tub like anybody does, but that movie doesn't affect me that way. Yet
the chick in the tub, I didn't mind. It was when she got out and was an old, rotted lady.
Well, yeah, the first chick in the tub, that's fine. But that movie, for some reason, doesn't resonate like an Exorcist would. The Exorcist would, because of that one scene that you mentioned. That's just wow. But
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But for someone that isn't a horror movie guy and that does admit to like. This stuff frightens me. The Shining was fine. I don't have a straight line answer for that. I can't figure out why I can watch The Shining. I took the novel on my honeymoon. I laid in Jamaica in 2000 and read The Shining, and people were looking at me like, you may have just married a psychopath. And yeah. I was like, no, I just never read the book.
I just recently read it, and I actually prefer the film.
Really?
But there's just too much weird sexual crap in that book. But
I heard it was a good book. I haven't read the book. That film is really scary. A lot of there's another one I like. I really like The Serpent in the Rainbow. That's an older one. It's been a while, man. I've been so into the shows. Like, I really like The Walking Dead. I just think it's friggin' awesome. I
love
been
it.
Really,
I think it's
Strain.
Like,
I do too.
Have you seen
The Strain?
The Strain?
I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard really of it.
Into that, and
do you consider Event Horizon a scary film?
Oh yeah, that's a freaking scary film too. And
that didn't scare me.
Event Horizon
is kind of a messed up movie.
And Aliens, I love Alien and Aliens.
Oh yeah, that's good.
The first,
I fell asleep.
So good. Hellraiser, there's a good one.
Hellraiser is amazing. Yeah, my favorite horror film, I think, is John Carpenter's The Thing.
Ooh.
And if it's not that, it's definitely going to be Halloween from him. John Carpenter is on the top tier for me, but that's just me. Mm. Although I do really like Suspiria. You mentioned Argento earlier.
That is a good one.
I think I just startle easy. Steven and I were talking about this beforehand. He calls it you gave me the terminology. What's it called?
It's called a jump scare.
A jump scare. Like, it's literally...
It's when the cat jumps out of the closet.
Yeah. I am a total, I mean, I guess it's supposed to scare everybody. It'll make everybody stutter a little bit, but I'm a total sucker for that stuff. Like the slow burn, creepy stuff and everything is kind of like, gets me sort of.
I love slow burns, creepy.
Right. The boogie boogie stuff jumping out from around the corner. is the stuff that makes me throw the popcorn halfway in the air and ah, and yeah, I'm a total sucker.
But what do you do? What do you do right after that happens?
Laugh my ass off.
Exactly. And exactly.
I picture the third party watching me and being like, look at big tough Travis over there. He just threw half his popcorn on the floor because he jumped out of his seat. I laugh about it.
Jeff, you're a zombie guy, right?
Yeah, lately. Lately I've been pretty into it.
Which one of... I'm just having fun here. Which of the original George Romero trilogy is your favorite?
Oh, you know what? Like, I got into it sort of through other means into zombies, and I haven't actually watched all those. The Night of the Living Dead and stuff, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, Night, Dawn, and Day.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I think I've seen them when I was younger, but I was a vampire guy forever until I don't know when it was. It was before Walking Dead came out. And I started watching all those horrible zombie movies on Netflix. I can't even tell you any of their names, and I was having so much fun. And then Walking Dead came out, and it, like, zombies were fun because they were funny. Right? Like, there was a funniness to it because it was so stupid.
Right.
But now it's just like, oh my gosh, this is actually great. Like, well, this is...
What did you think about... Speaking of zombie movie, what did you think of 28 Days?
Oh, I did like that stuff. Yeah.
Me too. I like 28 Days. And 28 Days didn't scare me because they were almost like, we're going to purposely custom make this for Travis. We don't want to scare him too much because he might piddle himself on the floor. So they did like that. They did like that shaky camera. Here it comes every single time. Yeah, like they gave you like this little tiny warning that it was coming, which I was like, oh, okay, something crazy is about to happen. Yep. There it is. As opposed to if they wouldn't have did that camera trick, that movie would have gotten me 15 times. Ah, you know, with something coming out from around the corner. I don't know why they did that to that movie, but I don't know. I just remember really digging that movie because it was up my alley with the zombies and everything, and they managed to not, like, constantly have something jumping out from around the corner every 3 minutes. It's like, all right, I get the point, you know? I don't know.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm not an authority on this. I should probably just go to bed.
It's been so long. Like, now with everything being at your fingertips, it's like I see so much that it's hard to remember everything that I see all the time. There's a few things that have stood out that aren't as horror related. Like, like I said, obviously The Strain and that stuff. Oh, you know what? As far as zombies goes, I've been watching that show iZombie. It's totally funny. It's a comedy.
I can't do it. I just It's hilarious. I saw a preview of it and my eyes rolled so far in the back of my head. They haven't come back yet.
It's not scary at all. It's funny.
No, I'm not. I just hate
He's a purist.
Anything with iPhone, iTech. Like, I hated any movies where they incorporate head cams and GoPros to make a horror movie. I just hate all that stuff. I hear you. I just It was like, because I hate all those like CSI Miami's and CSI this and that's, and like, it just kind of struck me as like the two worst things I could think of put together, like, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I do love Walking Dead. I love Walking Dead because there's times where I feel like it's just like there's like these slow, almost like art film moments mixed in with like the zombie stuff. There's these scenes where they're just like driving and they're doing these like, I don't know, like that one episode. I don't know if you guys are caught up on it, but there was an episode a few seasons back where Carol and what was the dude with the hat, the big black guy with the hat, who lost his sister or his wife. He lost his wife.
Oh, I know who you mean.
And it was Carol. Something happened where it was Carol. She was forced to leave the camp, and there was an episode where they were together in a cabin, and they were caring for the two blonde girls, little girls.
Yep. Oh, who my ended God, up you dying. You picked the one episode that wrenched my gut so hard.
Dude, I was sitting there like teary-eyed watching that. That was just such a...
That's the one where Carol like took the girl out and shot her, basically, right?
Yeah, and that whole... And
that was wow. That was...
There was a scene in that episode where they're sitting at the table. They're sitting at a table inside the and just having a discussion, and Carol finally like reveals her, you know, big dark secret to him and all that, and he forgives her, and it was just like,
you're fuzzing.
You know what?
Fuzzing.
Am I better?
Nope.
Right, hold on.
You should watch A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
While Steven is unfuzzing, he'll be out in a minute. Jeff, what did you think of 30 Days of Night?
Yeah, I did see that. I don't remember.
That was the Alaska.
Yeah. That was good. I liked that.
You did like that one too? See, I like.
Yep, I like that one.
I like that all the way up to the last 3 minutes of it, and it sucked because they gave it that Hollywood everything's gonna be okay ending.
Yeah.
Hello.
Nope. Still fuzzy. This is because you're talking about horror movies. This is the devil.
Oh, that's good.
This is the devil. The devil in your internet, Steven.
Jeff.
Yes.
Last thing before we sign off. Let the right one in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one was good. That was kind of creepy.
I thought it was like the best thing I've seen in vampire movies since like the 80s or something, like The Lost Boys or something.
Never heard of it.
That's why you should watch A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, because it's got a similar vibe. It's pretty creepy. Yeah.
I will definitely be watching it. Happy Halloween.
Yeah. Happy Halloween. Have fun. I'm definitely going to go trick-or-treating with the kids. They love it.
Right on.
That's awesome.
Get all dressed up.
How old are your kids?
13, 10, and 5.
No way. Girls. 13. Yeah. That's the magic number.
Oh, yeah. For Halloween, it's great.
That's awesome.
And that, my friends, draws to a close my reminiscences and recorded excerpts of highlights of gothic terror. I hope I've engendered a pleasant baker's dozen of shudders in you, reminded you of the rich vein of imaginative lore to be mined, and outright frightened you a bit, for that was surely what you wanted, wasn't it? With some of my own weird characterizations and memorable excursions into the strange and eerie. And so, until we meet again, may all your nightmares have happy endings in the final reel. Good night, and sleep well.
He's still here. What is that noise? I don't know. Is it still? Is it getting closer? I don't know. Just keep listening. Wait, I think I heard it.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.